Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Well, Grant, sir, here we are, end of 2020. I'm not sure that we thought we'd actually make it to this point, but 103 VanCasts later, the end of the calendar year is in sight.
103, eh? It's a good milestone, like a solid level of production. I don't know if we'll win the Art Ross with 103, but we've got to be in the mix. Look, it's been fun, right? Like, this has been a highlight of 2020 for me was, you know, and granted, not exactly stiff competition, but you know, every 3 or 4 days, right, I know that I've got this half hour to chat with my buddy, right? And I've looked forward to it. Like, I've looked forward to it personally. It's been fun to do, and the fact that, you know, the audience seems to respond and that we get to engage with Canucks fans and that people send us fun artwork and fun ideas and, you know, we hear that commentary and know how much it means to other folks too. That's just, you know, icing on the cake. This has been a big part of what's kept me, I don't want to say kept me sane because it's all relative, but has kept me going through a tough year.
103 podcasts is, it really is a pretty remarkable number when you think the Canucks played 47 games in the calendar year. They played 29 before COVID hit.
Right.
They hit 29 in the regular season, and then COVID struck, and then the first break, and then they played the one exhibition game before the bubble, and 17 games in the bubble. Added up, there are your 47 games, and somehow we managed to pump out 103 podcasts, considering they haven't played a game since, I think it was September the 4th, was the night that they were eliminated by Vegas Game 7 in the bubble. So, you're right, it's brought a little regularity. I think it helps keep the focus a little bit. I mean, it would have been easy to drift away when there wasn't much in the way of Canuck news. It forced us to get creative at times. When you think back to Name That Canuck, and we had some fun with that, however many rounds of it we played here. Look, I don't want to turn this into a year in review, because there's a fair bit to chew on here, given that we haven't recorded a podcast since before Christmas. And it's kind of funny, when I mention Name That Canuck, if you'll recall, the very first Canuck in our game was Jason King. And so everything's sort of come full circle here. You almost stumped me. I needed bonus clues. I think we argued whether I should get a full point or a half point on Jason King. Because your clues were just too damn tough, quite frankly.
Yeah, my bad.
But Jason King in the news cycle here, because we talked about this for the weeks. It wasn't just Travis Green needing an extension. They had to round out his staff. And I think, to me, this was not an unsurprising hire. Look, Jason King has paid his dues. He's been in Utica. He's sort of been on the path of Travis Green and Nolan Baumgartner, and now he joins them in the big leagues, and everybody aspires to get to the NHL, and he's been there once as a player, and here he is again. But the fact that the Canucks kept it in-house, kept it with guys in both Jason King and Chris Higgins, who takes on the role of development slash skills coach, you know, guys that were under contract to the organization, I think is an extension of a lot of these issues that we've been talking about with the Vancouver Canucks over the last 3 months.
There's no question that it is, but that also shouldn't obscure, you know, that Jason is by all accounts a very able coach, right? Like, well regarded in American Hockey League circles. He's been hired by Green before, right? Green brought him into the organization. He's done a ton of different stuff in the American League, right? Like, he was a director of, I think, hockey ops for the St. John's, and they were named after, like, the Tim Hortons drink, right? Like, it was like the St. John Ice Caps back in the day. You know, he's, like, I think there's no question you can read a ton into the fact that both King and Higgins were under contract, but I also think that Jason was going to be a very strong contender for this position in a normal world anyway. Like, I think he would have been probably a finalist based on how he's regarded internally and how he's regarded around the industry. So I think that's important context to keep in mind. As for Higgins, you know, obviously there's going to be a learning curve. Like, this is a guy who's never been a coach. But this is also a pretty similar path to the one that Manny Malhotra took, right?
Right.
And yes. So you know, we'll sort of see how that goes. I do think with Higgins, though, we're talking about, you know, an Ivy League guy. We're talking about a guy who did a lot of smart things. Like, he was a really smart player. Him and Manny Malhotra actually have that in common. As players, they were pretty cerebral, and they got more out of their careers, right, than they probably should have. Like, you think about Higgins when he first came into the league, and he had that howitzer wrist shot. When he was Montreal Canadiens, like, early in his career. And I don't know if there were some wrist surgeries or something happened, but his shot kind of went away, and yet he was an absolute beast certainly for the Canucks. Like, late career Chris Higgins with the core strength and the, you know, headline worthy abs. Guy just didn't lose battles, right? And when you go back and look at some of those seasons, like the 11-12 season where they won the President's Trophy, he had like, he was on a 50-point pace or something like that, like 45 at least, with almost no power play time because the Canucks didn't give their second unit much. I think he had like 2 power play points. And, you know, honestly, like, his underlying numbers just, I mean, not Datsyuk-level pornographic, but pretty close. So, you know, I mean, I think these are two capable gentlemen. Bright guys, and yet, you know, the context of this club's spendthrift approach to this pandemic shortened campaign, I do think sort of hangs over this. There's no question about it. And when you think about the opportunity that a club has when they have a vacancy on their coaching staff, in their management ranks, what have you, like, there's an opportunity to interview, to pick brains, to get fresh perspectives on old problems and your organization as a whole. And from what I can tell, like, I don't know that there was a particularly wide net cast. Like, certainly we didn't hear about anything, right?
No, definitely not.
And so, you know, one does sort of look at that and think there's probably some missed opportunity here, even though when you look at this coaching staff and you look at Ian Clark and Baumgartner and Newell Brown and King and Higgins, like, you've got obviously Travis presiding over it all. I think there's no question you've got some really, really smart folks, you know, and a lot of experience and a lot of experience and a lot of sort of overall hockey intelligence. Like, I don't think you're looking at that coaching staff and thinking anything but that's a really solid group. You know, by any means, by any terms, using any criteria you want. But I do think that needs to be mentioned, and not just optically, but because there are real opportunity costs in not being able to kick those tires.
Now, that was news that had to happen here ahead of training camp. I mean, we knew that the Canucks would round out their staff, so they've got that taken care of. Nothing really new on the Travis Green front. In fact, I didn't realize that this was a race between you, Harm, and Travis to get contract extensions done before training camp began. But congrats to the two of you. You tweeted it out. I mean, this is good news, obviously, for you guys. It's good news for the readers, the VIPs, And it's good that the podcast partner is under lock and key for the foreseeable future. So I don't know if there's anything you want to add to all of that, but certainly, yeah, I don't know if there was uncertainty in all of this, but in these trying times, that had to be a relief just to take care of that business.
It was. And yeah, no, I mean, the main thing is that I just want to thank all the VIPs. Like this, when I think back to coming into this gig 16 months ago, but really it was just one full season ago, right? Like it was only 11 days before camp that I joined The Athletic and you know, explained it in the Why I Joined The Athletic article that are now, those articles that are now cliche. And when I think back to what I was thinking about the job then, I was really, you know, it felt like a solemn responsibility, right, to live up to and carry on a legacy for Jason and for the, you know, outlet that he really built up in this market, right? Like there were a lot of subscribers who were, I'd say the vast majority of our subscribers were here to read Jason, and making sure that, you know, they saw the reason that they subscribed reflected back to them at The Athletic Vancouver as we move forward was really important and something we took really seriously. And I wasn't sure how it would go. I was confident, but you know, it was a intimidating task to take on. And when I think now through what we've been through over 16 months and the season and the playoff run and the Sedin jersey retirement and, you know, just the 50th anniversary season, all the stories, all the writing, all the podcasts, like it's been so much fun. And I'm just so grateful to the VIPs who've stuck with us, who've joined us in the 16 months since I joined, and who've really made it all possible. So I just want to thank our listeners and all our subscribers, because without them, this doesn't happen. So just thank you.
So here we sit 6 days ahead of training camp for the Canucks. Mm-hmm. It's a couple of days now until the Forgotten Seven get a chance to get back on the ice. Like hockey is right there knocking on the door, and we're seeing news bombs, like bombs being dropped around the National Hockey League. Chicago, the Jonathan Toews story on top of Kirby Dach and that injury. That's a shame for him, obviously.
Brutal.
Ottawa making a bunch of trades. Tampa getting out from under the cap hell by acquiring contracts of guys
Can I just rewind? Ottawa.
Yes. Making
investing
trades
in their roster.
Yeah.
Let's just let that resonate for a sec. No, but Montreal's the Molson family. Like they've spent more this offseason when you think about Anderson, Gallagher, you know, Jake Allen, Edmondson, right? Like they've been taking on money. Toffoli. Petrie, right. I don't know that there's another organized, like there was a point in the offseason where the Montreal Canadiens had spent like 60% of all money in the system.
Right.
right before the market opened. But Ottawa, come on. Ottawa for funsies going out and making moves, upgrading their roster and their depth. Ottawa. Like, come on.
Right, and picking up players that they could in turn flip again, I suppose. Like, you know, these deals may not be done in totality because they could turn around and peddle, although we've talked about the troubles of Canadian teams at the trade deadline. Mike Hoffman, obviously, in St. Louis. We saw Athanasiou go to Los Angeles. You know, all of this is my way of saying stuff's happening around the National Hockey League, but again, nothing happening here in Vancouver. And so, I mean, Jim has been consistent through all of his media availabilities, really since free agency, you know, where he's banged that drum about going young. And I guess people thought, you know, the Hamonic talk was there and maybe something would happen. And look, Hamonic's still on the market. I'm not ruling that one out, but it just feels as we creep closer to training camp that Jim Benning wasn't trying to steer people in the wrong direction. I mean, he was suggesting really since October that it was time to go young, and for a team that was hamstrung by cap issues, it looks like what you see is what you're going to get as far as the camp roster is concerned.
Yeah, and it's just so fascinating that ultimately the cap is not the decisive influence preventing the Canucks from making some, you know, clear, obvious relatively affordable moves to bolster areas of their roster where the weaknesses are relatively glaring, right? Like defensive depth and second line right wing. I don't think there's any question that both positions could be addressed for 2.5. I don't think there's any question that the Canucks have that cap flexibility once Ferland goes on LTI, right? So this is obviously more complicated than just cap, right? There is a cash element here. Cash is king in a world with no gate revenue. And clearly that's shaped, had a decisive influence in shaping this Canucks offseason. You know, and we'll sort of see. Like, I don't sense, J-Pat, that the market's that frustrated about it, right? Like, I don't sense that there's a ton of anger or frustration at how the Canucks have proceeded this offseason. But that comes with a big qualifier. Like, in italics, the key word here is yet, right? Because in a world where defensive injuries pile up, in a world where the young guys aren't ready to, you know, forget playing a third pair role, but play 22 minutes in the event that, you know, an Edler or a Myers or a Canucks defender who's counted on to play top 4 minutes goes down or misses any stretch of the season, and forget injury, what if it's just a close contact isolation, right? Like, there's so many so much uncertainty that's going to govern this campaign. It seems like having a lack of depth is, you know, going to matter even more this year than it usually does. And it always matters, right? Like, it's depth is where you win cups. You know, there's a reason the Tampa Bay Lightning gave up firsts for guys like Gaudreau and Blake Coleman, right? Like, those players put teams over the top. Everyone has elite talent for the most part in the NHL. Like, this is the NHL for a reason. It's the team with the best third line that often wins the cup, right? Like, that's how it works. And so, yeah, I mean, I just look at this and wonder how this is going to play out, because it just seems to me that the risk profile on a team that, you know, exceeded expectations, seemed to defy gravity at certain points during the 19-20 campaign, like, their risk profile is so enormous because of, you know, some of these obvious holes on the roster that have not been addressed, and, you know, big whopping hope bets that are being placed on young guys to step up and do stuff that we've never seen them do before, right? Like, at a level we've never seen them do it at. So I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm not saying the Canucks aren't going to be competitive in the Canadian division. I expect they will be, but just the chances that things go wrong seem to me to be a lot higher for the Canucks than they are for, you know, certainly teams like Calgary, Montreal, and Toronto that just don't have the same issues and have more bodies to throw at any problems that arise.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
To your point about frustration in the market, I think a lot of it, Tom, is that, like, if you tilt this back into normal times, you know, the offseason is July and August, right? Even if your team's eliminated,
right,
there's some May and June, but the June's got the draft, and then free agency, and then you take stock of what your team did or didn't do, and then it's July and August, and training camp starts sort of right out of Labor Day. Well, you think about it. I mean, the Stanley Cup was presented in early October, right? Was it? Yeah, the Canucks got eliminated in September. Stanley Cup October. So this year,
sorry, it was presented in late September, right?
Late September. Okay. So
I don't really remember, man. I was there. I don't really remember. I'm honestly like, you say October. I'm like, holy fuck, was I really there till October?
We don't need it. We don't we don't need a specific date for this part of the argument, but it's that hockey hasn't been played for October, November, December now. And so, you know, this offseason really has been longer than a normal offseason. Plus, you got COVID, then you had Christmas, and you got the NFL playoffs heating up, and you've got the World Juniors on now. Like, I just think people have, you know, they sort of formed their opinion about what the Canucks did or didn't do in free agency way back in October, and it sat on a shelf. The frustration will come. Like, if things start to go sideways or the same issues pop up, as you talked about, you know, remember in the bubble, it was all about depth scoring. Could they squeeze anything out of their bottom six? And most nights they couldn't, and depth on defense. And, you know, those issues, if they arise again, it won't take long. We know how this market works. But I just kind of think that really there has been a numbness to all of it. Just because of the length of time that we've gone without hockey. So that's going to end here shortly early in the new year with training camp starting up. And this is the other thing. When I say news bombs are happening around the NHL, you know, it's not just the trades and the injuries and all that kind of stuff. Like, look, teams are putting out their training camp rosters. GMs are speaking publicly. Teams are making players available, training camp schedules, all of that kind of stuff. And we haven't heard a word. Like, it has been remarkably, dare I say, ridiculously quiet around the Vancouver Canucks these days.
Yeah, it has. And look, it's also been a tough offseason, right? It feels like the Canucks haven't been able to turn around without, you know, knocking a porcelain plate off the shelf, right? Like, logo controversies, anthem controversies. You know, it's been a never-ending sort of cycle.
Goalie mask controversies.
Goalie mask. I forgot about the tortoises. Yeah, it's just been a constant sort of churn of talking points, and most of them negative. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how everything gets stick handled, because we are 6 days out, right? We are going to be monitoring a ton of stories really closely. Like, yeah, I think we'll be focused pretty quickly once camp opens on things like who's going to play on the third pair, right? Like, that's going to be like one of the big stories, right? Like, we're going to track that with a level of diligence that would astonish 29 other hockey markets, right? That's what we do. But the, you know, prevailing logic of the Travis Green uncertainty, the continued uncertainty on that front, on some of the holes on the roster and why they weren't addressed, on a organization that's been relatively hollowed out on the business side, right? And on sort of what the overall future of this club looks like that's going to be hot, and that's going to be constant. And it probably should be, right? Like, when I say yet, I also think it's important that we keep a focus on, you know, what sort of happened here, right? Like, when a team underperforms expectations, and the Canucks' expectations are sky high, right? When a team underperforms, the first guy who usually gets blamed is the coach, and we would expect that to happen. And then it sort of goes up the line, like works its way up the chain. But, you know, when I look at the Canucks overall, and when I look at their offseason, when I try and take away, like, what matters, right? Like, what's the big nail on the head? What does this season mean, right? The big referendum to me seems to fall on ownership, right? Like, when I think about expected salary expenditure, and the Canucks cut $22 million, you know, from over $88 million when they left the bubble to $66.5 million today. When I think about that, and then I think, like, well, you know, they actually managed to replace Jacob Markstrom credibly, although I think people are underestimating the extent to which the Canucks are weaker in goal in this market. There's no question that Holtby is a credible replacement, right? Like, they upgraded their top four, even if they, you know, lack depth on the blue line. Like, when I think about the fact that those things got done, inarguably, right? Like, the top four is better, and goaltending, a huge departure, was credibly replaced. Like, I don't think you can look at this and give management less than a B, maybe even a B+, for what they accomplished. Like, upgrade your top four, replace a goaltender, re-sign all your key RFAs, and do it while trimming 20 plus million in expected salary off the books. Like, that's tough. That's tough, and they did it. Like, that's decent, you know? Like, you can maybe, if you want to blame management because they've got, you know, inefficient cap allocation everywhere on the books, well, especially in the bottom six forward group. Like, fair, fine, I'll have time for that. But in terms of the work since the club left the bubble, like, I don't think you can point to Jim Benning and say that's not good enough. Like, I think that was a pretty tough job, and I think it got done more or less decently well. Like, fine, like, it's fine. At the very least, it's fine, and I think it's probably better than that, considering the money chopped off the books. Like, this ultimately, this season is going to be a referendum for me anyway on the approach that ownership took and whether or not that pays off. Because as I consider what this season means, as I consider what matters, as I consider the fact that the club has taken, you know, a step back in terms of ambition, if not in the terms of the quality on their roster, although I think they did that too, I think surely we can all agree that they took a step back in terms of the ambition of what they hope to accomplish this season versus last year when they traded a first for Miller and a second for Toffoli, right? Like, clearly, in terms of ambition, this season is more about the future than it is about, you know, competing right now, right? About being serious about winning now, without doubt. And in doing that, and not having a coach that's extended, like, I just think you're creating these weird incentives, you know, that again pose an add to the club's overall risk profile, which to me is just overwhelmingly high as we enter this weird pandemic abbreviated campaign.
September 28th, by the way, is when the Stanley Cup was presented. So you were right. Late September, all the months kind of run together.
I thought I was home by October.
Right, because sure, October was free agency, right? The first week leading into Thanksgiving weekend, which, to your point about what management accomplished, I guess optics are part of it too. And we covered this at length in October, but, like, I can't remember the ire of this fan base being as high as it was in those days as the pending UFAs were walking out the door one by one by one by one, and it sort of reached its height when Toffoli signed for what looked like manageable numbers in Montreal. And, you know, Canucks management knew what was coming. They knew the Schmidt trade was coming. Nobody on the outside had the benefit of that information, and so it just looked like, you know, it looked like the door was open and one guy after the other after, and that was after management had stated. And I believe the intention was to try to get a deal done with Markstrom. Like, I don't think they sat there
question.
You know, we're just going to let these guys go.
They were just never going to do the Markstrom deal that Calgary did.
Calgary,
right? They wanted to keep Markstrom.
Sure. Yeah. They had a limit. No question. Yeah. But again, it was just the optics there for those sort of 48 or 72 hours.
But you're right, though, too, that, like, when Markstrom signed in Calgary, I think the reaction locally was like 6 years full NMC. Like, whoa. You know, like, I don't know that the Canucks should have done that. And then Tanev walked, and the same thing. Like, 4 years for Tanev, like, I don't know. He's been injured a lot. Like, great guy, big warrior, you know, huge Canucks legacy. But, man, I don't know. And then you lose Stetcher on the Saturday at, what, is it 1.2 times 2? And that's a deal that the Canucks should do all day and twice on Sunday, even though they didn't get it done on that fateful Saturday in October. And then Toffoli, right? And I do think, ultimately, the Toffoli one should sting the most, right? Because this is a guy, he's only going to be 31 when the deal expires, right? Like, he's only going to be 31. He's a consistent 40 to 50 point guy who was a uniquely good fit. You can't design a player who would have been a better fit for this club's core, especially when you consider what he brought to the power play as a playmaker from down low. And how he seemed to find chemistry with both Horvat and Pettersson, right? Like, that to me is the one that hurts the most. But yeah, it was an interesting, like, snowball, right? Because you lose the first two guys and whatever, and then it was the Stetcher Toffoli thing that really got it rolling downhill for like 3 hours until the Schmidt deal was done on Thanksgiving. What a weird weekend that was, eh?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But it's sort of par for the course of 2020, right? Like, just nothing made sense. So why not on Thanksgiving Monday at dinner time, you know, you're dropping the Nate Schmidt deal. And then that did sort of seem to keep the wolves at the door a little bit, right? Like, it gave something, gave fans something to chew on and think, like, hey, hang on a sec here. Like, all these other guys have left, but, you know, one of one of the priorities was to upgrade the defense, and certainly getting a player of Nate Schmidt's caliber and to get him, you know, the way they did, sort of squeezing Vegas because Vegas was in a pinch. So, no, it turned out that there's a lot. And look, like, we've talked about Nate Schmidt. Like, we're days away from seeing him in Canuck colors now, and I think that that will generate sort of a renewed excitement again, right? Like, you know that he's part of the group, but until you actually see him out there on the ice and see how he fits in and all of that kind of, like, I think people, again, they have a sense of who and what this player is, but now that he's a Canuck, like, it's only a matter of days till we actually see him out on the ice for the first time.
And I don't actually think people do have a sense for just how active Nate Schmidt is, right? Like, this is not just a guy. This is a really, really good defender who is extremely involved every time he's on the ice. Like, he is lightning fast. He's got great instincts for joining the rush. He's going to be exciting in a way that I don't know that this market's really prepared for yet.
Well, a couple of things. One is, look, the Canucks saw him against Vegas. Canuck fans watched him pretty closely against Vegas.
Yep.
You know, they've seen him in Vegas the last couple of seasons. And we're dealing with VIPs here who I think do have a pretty strong sense of, you know, what's happening around the National Hockey League. So I think the people that we deal with here on the podcast, the casual fan, maybe he's just a name. But I think our VIPs, I think they have a pretty good sense of what Nate Schmidt's all about.
My bad. Sorry, VIPs. I should have given you more respect. I do think, though, especially because of how the Canucks were attacked in the playoffs, right? Like, the way that St. Louis and Vegas sold out to forecheck them, right? To cut off their attack at the base, to challenge all Canucks defenders not named Quinn Hughes, although in Vegas's case, also Quinn Hughes, just to break the puck out, right? Schmidt addresses what was probably this team's biggest flaw in a meaningful way. And then the fact that he's reliable enough defensively, it just adds to it. But I don't want to go as far as to say like a Christian Ehrhoff type impact, but I don't think that's out of the question in terms of what he's going to do to Vancouver's ability to attack vertically. And when this club attacks off the rush, like, they are lethal. So I just think it's a uniquely good fit. And that he could be a lot more than even the VIPs are expecting.
And I think, and correct me if I'm wrong here, and I'm sure you will, but I think after the, I think after the
well after Schmidt the after break, you sold me out on Schmidt, yeah.
I think after the Schmidt trade and after that first weekend of free agency, was the last time that Jim Benning has done a wide media avail, like on Zoom. I think it's the last time he appeared on camera. And I know we've all talked to him, and stories have been written where he's been quoted, but in terms of a general sort of the Vancouver and maybe even wider hockey media having access to the general manager, I don't think that that has happened since mid-October. There may have been one somewhere in there that I'm forgetting, but obviously, again, these are things that are coming to an end here pretty quickly because and some of it, maybe all of it's calculated, because he knows that questions are going to come fast and furiously about the head coach and his contract. And Travis hasn't done any media since the end of the season either, right? Like, IMAC did a story with him from his home in California. But again, he popped up on that coach's site video last week where, you know, he was asked some pretty general questions. And that's a website designed for minor hockey coaches and minor hockey players. Like, I wasn't expecting them to grill Travis Green, but his contract extension didn't come up. The one thing that did, some fun there, where they let Antoine Roussel ask the question about getting out of the bag skate. No, that was good fun, and I thought Travis handled it well and confirmed that, yes, the bag skate is going to be part of training camp to the surprise of nobody. But, you know, like, these guys that have been at camps with Travis now for a bunch of years, like, they know it's coming, that these are hard, hard training camps. And I think of a guy like Tim Schaller in his first training camp in Whistler where he couldn't keep up, and he talked the second year in Victoria about, like, damn, I put in the work. And you were there in Victoria. Like, you know, he said, like,
I was there and I was impressed.
Right. Exactly. <Yeah. laughs> Such a shame. But no, like, I use Schaller as the example because guys that are new to the organization, like, maybe they don't know what they're in for, but the guys that have been here through Travis Green camps and this year without exhibition games, like, I would imagine the skating component, the work rate at this camp will probably be the highest that it has been for any of the camps, preseason or summer camp, as it was these past few months, that Travis Green has overseen in his time as the head coach here.
Yeah, well, and I mean, the proof's in the pudding, right? 103-plus point percentage or points rate in the month of October, right? Like, this team gets out flying, and it's probably because of how they skate, right? Like, that's, I don't think it's a big quantum leap over some, like, chasm of doubt to say that, you know, there's probably a direct correlation to how the club prepares at camp with how they start the season. And again, the leverage of that's just through the roof. We talked about it last time, but I mean, that's a huge sort of subtle story to watch here, because if this Canucks team, and they have a relatively favorable early season schedule too, like, they don't face the Maple Leafs until the 14th game, right? Like, this team is primed to get off to a good start. And not only would that mean a ton in a shortened season in terms of their playoff odds and the playoff race as a whole, but in terms of what it would do in terms of quieting things down locally, right? In terms of making sure that the Green thing's not a story, etc. I think it's mammoth. Like, I don't think the importance of that can be understated. Here's the other thing. When the Canucks do media day at some point this week, like, that's happening this week at some point. When the Canucks do that, like, I do expect them to try and do that thing where it's like, we're going to address it and then we're not going to talk about it again. Green's contract status. We believe in him, you know, da 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 da. And it's like, we're all going to listen to it. We're all going to be like, okay. And then we're all going to follow up with like five straight questions about Green's contract status. And then we'll ask about it every time Jim Benning speaks for the entire season, right? Like, that's just how this works. And that's sort of where the Canucks are marching toward with this situation. And that's the right way for it to be. Like, did you see Steve Simmons call Greener one of the best coaches in the country? Or the best? Probably. He said probably the best coach in the country. I was like, whoa, that's... I mean, you know, he also had Shea Weber listed as the seventh player in Canada. So take it with a grain of salt. But nonetheless, like, that's high praise from, you know, a very senior national columnist in this country, right? Like, that's sort of what we're talking about. So obviously this is going to be a local talking point, no matter how the team does. But I do think a hot start can turn the noise down in a big way. And, you know, that's something that's become sort of a characteristic for this club.
Travis must have been a great quote for Simmons back in the 20s in Toronto.
Yeah, right. Well, what was it? The story the Toronto media guys always tell is the Ty Domi one, right? Do you know this?
I don't know. Maybe.
The Ty Domi like called Travis out specifically. He was like upset about his ice time. He was like, you know, while this other guy plays ahead of me and hasn't scored a goal in 15 games. and like Travis has like the big scrum the next day and sort of like takes the high road. And Toronto media always talk about that as like a grace under fire example that stands out to them, you know, 20 years later. So, no, that's the Ty Domi story. You know, you've never heard that.
I don't think I have. No.
Wow. Yeah. No, that's like a classic, Toronto media fable, in regards to, so whether or not he was a good quote, I think he, won some admirers that day as the story goes in Toronto media circles. Hey, I have an idea for something and we didn't talk about this before. But I feel like it, you know, as we look back and think about 2020, and I know we don't want to do year in review, but maybe we can do a brief year in review segment. Sure, I was thinking, why don't we pick a couple of like fun media moments, like sports media, Vancouver sports media moments that stand out to you from this year? And I'll start just to get the pot stirring, because there's one thing that I just feel like as we prep for media day stands out in my mind as just this thing that I enjoyed so much, like so much. One of my favorite moments in a dark, dark year by far was when the Canucks did media day before the summer return to play. And Matt Sakaris on TSN 1040 had reported, you know, that the Canucks might consider dealing Besser at some point, you know, in an ill-defined future. And media day begins, and one after the other, Brock, Jim, Travis, all take turns dunking on the report. First of all, in context, that kicked off a summer of radio wars unlike anything this market's ever seen. But also, was just so uniquely funny, so uniquely Vancouver. Just tremendous shit all around. I will remember that day for a long time just because it was so distinct, so Vancouver. Fabulous. Just fabulous stuff. I don't know that we'll get similar pyrotechnics when the Canucks open camp on Sunday, but fingers crossed.
Yeah, look, that was, you're right, I hadn't thought about that one for a while, but it was cold, it was calculated, and like it felt like it was never ending. But hey, that's a heck of a coordinated response from the hockey club. They clearly weren't happy with those reports, and it does seem like Brock Besser is still on the roster here in late December, so he hasn't gone anywhere. You're right, like for me, just having summer hockey back, we weren't sure how the market would respond after the COVID break, and I know, like, you were there in Edmonton watching these games, but back in Vancouver, you know, for me, kind of climbing back into that chair of playoff game night and hosting playoff games like well past midnight, and to do it in a market with two radio stations that were doing it, and like people seemed to be eating it up, like it was awesome, like it was great. That feeling had been out of the market for a long, long time. If I think back to the very first pod that we recorded in 2020, the Canucks defeated the Rangers 2-1 on a Saturday night at Rogers Arena and then had to head for Florida.
Right.
And I flew all day Sunday. You were flying on the Monday for some reason, but you were coming out on the road.
Yeah.
And because the Canucks were practicing in Florida with the time change and you had a flight to catch, if I'm not mistaken, our very first pod of 2020, you recorded at like 5 in the morning.
That's right.
Right? Like,
yes.
It was 8 in Tampa, ahead of practice, and because you had to get up and going with the time change, we got you on the line around 5 in the morning, and then what happened? Like, you somehow didn't quite get to Tampa as smoothly as you wanted to.
Now my work visa has expired, right? Or sorry, my work visa had expired 2 days before, like the work visa that I worked on with the Florida Panthers, right, expired at the end of 2019, right? So all of a sudden I'm re-entering the country to the same state that I'd worked in legally with my work visa, right? 3 days following the expiry of my visa. So the customs agent was like, what? No chance, right? Like, this is complicated. You have to go to the other room. And I missed a narrow connection. And so I had to spend the night in Toronto. And also, you know that pleading you do when you know you're screwed? You know, like, you're just like, please, please. Like, I'm employed. Like, I'm not staying there, I promise you. I have no desire to stay in Florida. Like, please. And, yeah, so I got hosed. I spent the night at the airport Westin. And, yeah, it was a pain in the ass. Massive, massive pain in the ass.
You made it, though. And
I did.
You made it in time. You made it in time to see the Canucks get shellacked 9-2 by the Bolts. And then we drove from, you, me, and PJ drove from Tampa down to Sunrise. And you took us through all the spring training baseball cities. And then on to Fort Lauderdale. And then that trip continued up to Buffalo.
Right.
And that's where you left. You went from Buffalo, you went across the border to Toronto.
Well, they played.
They played Buffalo and Minnesota back-to-back afternoon games.
They did, and they played really well. Those two games after the Florida debacle were probably two of Vancouver's best games of the season for me. Like, they looked kind of like they did in the playoffs, where their defense was actually like solid. Like, those two games stand out to me, and then they came back and they beat the Coyotes and then the Sharks right before the All-Star break to become what first in the Northwest. And that stretch of four games, that was like what this club could look like. That was like a hint of their potential. And I do think they found that form again and sort of looked like a systems team again in the playoffs. Anyway,
the Friday night in Buffalo. Again, it's a Saturday afternoon game. You, me, and Patrick out for wings in Buffalo. And I get all these notifications on my phone that my flight from Buffalo through Chicago to Minnesota has been canceled.
Right.
And I go into panic mode. It's January. It's winter storms basically across the Midwest and northern U.S. Like, it comes to the territory. Yeah, you're laughing because you were going to Toronto. It was no big deal. And so I had to, like, step outside the restaurant, and I'm dealing with travel and corporate travel, and you guys are, like, chowing down as the food arrives, and I'm looking through the window seeing you eating. And anyways, the end of a long story is I ended up having to go from Buffalo to Charlotte to Minnesota on the Saturday night.
Yikes.
That is not the most direct route to get from Buffalo to Minnesota. But I made it there. I made it in time, and my streak continued, only interrupted by COVID, ultimately, in Glendale. But, yeah, I mean, look, there were a ton of memories, some good hockey games we saw, some fun along the way.
Well, it's always memorable when we're at Gabriel's Gate. That is, yes, of course, the restaurant in Buffalo we ate at for the legendary Jorts evening.
The night of the Jorts, yes.
Oh, I can't wait to get back there. Hopefully in the summer when I can wear appropriate legwear.
Yeah, mid-January was not the time for Jorts, not by a long shot. So that was a wild trip to pack for, because it was Florida, and then it was Buffalo and Minnesota, Winnipeg on the back end. So
yikes.
You try to figure out how you pack for a road trip like that one. Anyways, made it through that one, made it through a bunch more, and here we sit now in the lead-up to training camp that I think a lot of us thought may never actually arrive here. So it's been a grind. It's been a churn for everybody in this calendar year of 2020, but we're just so thankful that the VIPs hung in there with us for each and every one of the 103 VanCasts that we pumped out.
Seriously, it was honestly, yeah. I mean, I said it at the start, I'll say it again. I just, this project has been a ton of fun and was a huge highlight for me as I went through 2020. So thank you, Jeff, too. Thank you, J-Pat. You crushed it.
Oh, right back at you. And let's finish up with a quick Wallace update. I've seen lots of photos out there. He seems to be breaking hearts wherever he goes. His cuteness,
yep,
resonating with the people. I know you're a married man, but like, it's been so long since I've had a puppy in my household. But like, is it a chick magnet? Like, are you attracting attention wherever you take him?
He makes a lot of friends, and he's good with strangers, which is fantastic. Honestly, this is a rookie of the year pup. Like, I'm not kidding. I don't want to just be like proud parent guy, but man, like, I've already got, he was housebroken by day two, slept through the night by day two. You know, he's good with people. I took him to Kitts Beach, just to like stress him out, honestly, just to like take him somewhere that was busy to see how he'd handle it. And he could not have been a better boy. Like, he was the perfect boy. He is, he's awesome. Honestly, it's such a relief this year to sort of close it up with a puppy. I'm sort of on vacation right now. We're doing a last VanCast, but I'm on vacation from The Athletic through the new year, and spending that time with the puppy and just like really drilling down on, you know, training and raising him and playing with him, you know, has just been awesome. Like, it's really a balm salvaging what's been a tough year. He is just absolutely the apple of my eye. I'm completely in love. And that's the best possible way to end a year that's been shit throughout.
All right, before we wrap, a couple of things. If you're looking for other pod options, you want to get the hockey juices flowing, Kevin Fiala of the Minnesota Wild joins Mike Russo on this week's edition of Straight from the Source at The Athletic. And we always say this at the end of every VanCast. Check out our comment section for each podcast episode at The Athletic app. And rate and subscribe the VanCast on Apple. And don't forget, if you aren't already a subscriber, it's your last chance this week to go to theathletic.com/thevancast and receive two all-access subscriptions for just the price of one. Again, that's theathletic.com/thevancast. It's been a ton of fun. It has. And it will continue to be in 2021 training camp, brief as it'll be, and then on to these games. And we'll see if the schedule goes off without a hitch. There's bound to be a couple of hiccups somewhere along the way, just that we're, given the fact that we're not completely out of this pandemic by any means, but it does now feel like we're into the home stretch here before we get hockey back, and that's what we're all excited about. So looking forward to getting back into the groove of covering the Vancouver Canucks for me, for TSN, and here at the VanCast. And looking forward to what you and Harm and ultimately Wyatt, when games get up and running,
yep.
Stanchion with the armies. So we've missed them. It's been far too
long.
So all that stuff is coming back here quickly.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait for the first armies of the year and to be returning the same team on the other side of, you know, what was a ridiculous level of uncertainty in those early months of the pandemic. That's the best. Like, I'm so proud of the team we've got, and I'm so excited that we get a chance to do it again this season. It's going to be a lot of fun, man. And I'm excited to see you at the rink, bud. Even if, even albeit from a distance and wearing masks, it'll be nice to see you.
Well, I agree. I concur. And I just want to say to you and to Jeff DeMet, our producer.
Yes.
It's been a terrific year.
Hero.
And to all our listeners, thanks for everything here in 2020. Thanks for grinding through with us. Happy New Year, everybody. And we'll be back bigger and better than ever with the VanCast in 2021.